Okay, what I want to do today is I told yesterday whenever I have here my hands the RJJ journal. Yesterday, the newest edition. The newest edition, fall 2017, 5778, Sukkot is the newest edition. So yesterday there are five articles. So Baruch Hashem, I very quickly read through all the articles. And yesterday, the one that I really liked the most was Tzvilas Kelim, Tzvilat Kelim of electrical devices, which we did yesterday. Okay, that we went through yesterday, we went through Aristay. Now there are a few more articles, so not everything is appropriate for our share. I want to discuss with you, they have a fantastic article about Chodosh. It's seasonal. And maybe if we have time, we'll talk about this. The third, my third favorite article is transgenders in Jewish law and thought. 90% is not really appropriate for the shir, but there are some interesting things that maybe we'll talk about. But let me first, something which is a fantastic article. I encourage you all to read this. It's really one of the best articles I ever read on this topic, in the clarity and bringing out the issues and the leniencies. And that is something which is seasonal. And those who are makbid on chodosh, not eating grain, not eating wheat, or for that matter, any of the five grains that have been planted, have taken root in the ground, starting from after this past year of Pesach. So now is when the season begins. After Sukkot is the time when those that are machmir on Chodosh have to start checking serial numbers and have to start looking out all the bakeries who are putting up their signs. Yoshan, that Kemach Yoshan. After Pesach is over, there's no bakery that puts up a new sign, our flour is Yoshan. Anyone that puts up a sign after Pesach for the first time, that we don't have to worry, they don't know what they're doing, because after Pesach, you don't have to worry, it's not possible. Everything is Yoshan. When Pesach is over, so all of the grain in the whole world is now mutter. There's no prohibition whatsoever. The new grain has not yet grown, has not yet reached the market, where it's possible that they're producing a product that has been grown from grain that has been
How long does it take to grow?
What? How long is the minimum? So the truth is, Sukkot time is the first time that new grain comes into the market. This right
where
now.
Where is this grain grown?
Out in the West, United States.
What
out
about
in the West.
Grain that's grown in Brazil.
They ship it in very quickly. They ship it in, but
they have a different winter season and a different summer
does,
season.
In Echanami, there are two crops. In America, there are two crops. There is the winter crop and the spring crop. And in fact, in America, these crops, they're typically used for different products. Bread products are always from the summer crop. It's just a different type of dough. It's a different quality flour. Pretzels, crackers, type dough which they use to produce products that are hard, like crackers and pretzels and these types of things. In America, it is the middle of America, the industry standard is to use winter grain. Winter grain, for whatever reason, is ideal. Things they plant in the fall, and it grows over the winter. They harvest it right before Pesach. They harvest it like in the early spring. The very early spring is when it's harvested. I don't know exact details. The winter grain is ideal, but it's ideal for types of products that are hard. What that means, I do not know. Soft products like bread and cake, that flour in the industry, in the baking industry, the ideal is to use the summer crop. Grain that is planted in then grows over the summertime and is harvested at the end of the summer or the fall. And now, at this time of the year, November, the beginning of November, end of October, is the first time that grain reaches the market. So it's very possible that if you have a bakery, I don't know all the exact details, this is what I'm telling you, what it says in this book, or in this article, that it's very possible that if you don't pay attention, that the person who has the bakery, and he gets a new shipment of flour, it can be very well that the flour that he has got is fresh. It's so fresh, it has first been planted after Pesach. Pesach was over. They first put the seeds in the ground, and it took root, and now over the summer it grew, it was harvested, it was processed, everything else takes time, and it reaches the market into the stores, the retailers or wherever they are, the ones who begin to make the products. So people who are makbid on Yashan, the only relief from Kemach Yashan, begin to start checking the products, the serial numbers, typically right after Sukkot, maybe even before Sukkot. That's over the summer, and you don't pay attention. You don't even pay attention. You go to any pizza store you want. You don't have to have any.
September.
What?
It's already the end of September.
End of September. End of September. So right, Rosh Hashanah time, this time of the year. Over the summertime, you can take your kids to any pizza store you want. You don't have to blink. You don't have to think about it. Everything is good. Now is when the season begins. So we in America, traditionally, 90%, I would say, I don't know, I never had any friends that were makbid on this. I never knew anyone else. I never even heard of this until I got much older. No one ever heard of this. You makbid on eating Yashan. Who ever heard of this? What?
Yashan became
in style in the 80s. Yes, in the 80s, very okay. No one ever heard of this. Now, he has here a fascinating insight why that's so in America. No one ever heard of this. No one has ever makbid. Now, what's so shocking
Israel,
is...
in the United States, everywhere?
Oh, no. Only in Chutz Liaretz. Yashan in Eretz Yisrael is a deoraisa. No and if a but. There's no exception. Eretz Yisrael, it's the pasuk, the b'chol moishvay seichem, the pasuk, the b'chol moishvay seichem, the less man the polik, there was no, it doesn't depend on the Beis HaMikdash. Bizman hazeh, whether
so
it does.
What's the matter?
When it comes to matter. There's no question about it that there's a iser deoraisa to eat kemach chodosh in Eretz Yisrael bizman hazeh, even though there is no Beis HaMikdash, even though the majority of the Jewish people until recently, until about now, is not living in Eretz Yisrael. It does not make a difference to Gzeres HaKosov. Once they came into Eretz Yisrael, in order to be Matir Chodosh B'Medina, you have to bring the Karban Omer, or you have to wait until the second day Chol HaMoed, Pesach.
Matzah has to be Chodosh.
What?
No.
Matzah?
Yeah.
By Pesach, because not the first night.
The first night.
No, because the Adarabah. Well, that's the worst. It's the worst.
Matzah
is the biggest problem.
The flour for the matzah is
hard. Matzah is mitzvah. The flour is from more than a year.
No, it's not.
When's the harvest?
It's harvested in July, in June, July, and at the end of August, the latest in August. It's already been milled.
Okay, so matzah is the worst. That's the last day of the season. So if you're not going to be makbid, today all the matzah factories, they only have yashan. We live in a very firm world today, so you don't even realize today they're already putting into matzah, especially that they're only going to have kemach yashan. It's not so simple. Kemach yashan is problematic. I'm going to explain to you in a moment why it's not so bad to rely upon the heterim, because there are other problems. We'll get to them in a moment. But here are the issues. The issues over here are, number one, is that in the narrative Yisrael, there's no question, it's an iser d'oraisa. What about Chutz Li'aretz? So the vast majority, like 95% of the Rishonim who paskin everything else in Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam, the Rif, the Rosh, you go down the list, paskin that when it says in the pasuk that Chodosh is also b'chol moishvoy seichem, it includes Chutz Li'aretz, and it is an iser d'oraisa to eat anywhere in the world, even outer space. On the space station, it is usher to eat kemach chodosh, anything that has taken root in the ground after Pesach. It is usher to eat from that grain and iser d'oraisa. There's a loisase until the following second day of Pesach, or the third day of Pesach the following year. B'chol moshvo seichen. There is maybe a handful of rishonim, maybe one or two, the arzarua, maybe the Chumas Hadeshen, one or two Rishonim that say it's only midrabanan, but it's still also. In Chutz Li'aretz, Chodosh is not deraisa. It's not deraisa. It's only midrabanan. But let me remind you, a derabanan is a derabanan. There's no room to make it when it comes to a derabanan. So the question is Samanavshach. Why is it that the Ramah says that we're makel in Chutz Li'aretz, we're makel. Why are we makel? So I think the Ramah says, the Ramah explains, because of a sveik sveika. Now that means as follows. First of all, we're starting off with the assumption that it's only osur in Chutz Li'aretz midrabanan. Now let's add to the mix, when you go into a store, do you really know? When did this grow? Did this grain grow before? Did it take root in the ground before Pesach? When they plant the summer crop throughout the world, they planned it approximately Pesach time. Sometimes before Pesach, sometimes after Pesach. And the only thing you need for it to become mutter is that it should have taken root. If a teeny mashu of the grain of the kernels have taken root in the ground before the third day of Pesach, it's mutter. So when you go into a store and you buy a loaf of bread, first of all, maybe the flour was from the winter crop. And even in the scenario where the flour was from the summer crop, there's also a possibility that the grain took root in the ground before Pesach. So the Ramah says it's a sveik sveika. Now this was true for the Ramah in Krakow, in Poland. That was true traditionally in Poland, that there was a legitimate sveik sveika if we didn't control the market. The Jews did not necessarily control the market, and there were no serial numbers to look at, and it was a very different type of world. And indeed, if you make a thorough analysis, it would turn out that most of the time it was Yashan, and in the scenarios that it was not Yashan, it's a Sveik Sveika, and it's only, we're all going like the Shita Sayach, the Arzarua, that it's only Midrabanan. So you have plenty what to be samech on that it's only, and when you also want to add to the fact that if you're not going to be mad at people to eat yashan, they're going to literally starve to death.
Was there a winter crop in Krakow?
Yes, there was.
There was. Only winter crop because the summer.
For sure, they did the winter crop. Was there a summer crop? The winter crop for sure. So then you're for sure going to be good. All the wheat is in the winter, so then for sure you're going to be in business. They saved
the
over.
The summer season.
So
is very short.
Back in the day in the Altaheim. In Poland and in Europe, it was primarily a winter crop. Summer crop was not the priority, and also the main factor was people were very poor. Poland, dirt poor, and if you don't give them grain, bread to eat, they literally cannot eat bread for 6 months of the year, and they're going to starve to death, and they're going to get sick. And it's a health issue. It's mamash bikuach nefesh. It borders on bikuach nefesh, and in all likelihood it's good, and it's a sveik seika. So we can combine all of these things together. In Russia, okay, there were 3 million Jews who lived in Russia that were killed during the world during the Holocaust. 3 million Jews lived in Russia. There was only a winter crop. There was no such thing. There was no such thing as a summer crop because the earth was still frozen when you would plant the summer crop. It didn't even exist in Mitzias. I don't know how, but it was the earth at the time when you would plant the summer crop. When that time of the year, when it would be a problem, the ground in Russia was still frozen. So there was only a winter crop. It wasn't an issue to begin with. So the 3 million Jews who lived the last time when there was the massive population in Russia, it wasn't an issue to begin with. And in Poland, it was a sveik sveika. Now, and then as things got more complex, it got to be known that there was a problem. There may be a problem in certain situations. People began to rely upon the sheet of the Bach. The Bach said a tremendous chiddush, which shook up the world, and his opinion was the Isser Chodosh is only Osir if the grain was grown by a Jew. But if the grain is not grown by a Jew, the grain is grown by a non-Jew in Chutz Li'aretz, there is no requirement in Torah, period, that you're not limited with the laws of Chodosh and Yashan. This was the Shita of the Bach. The legend is that the Baal Shem Tov had a dream, had a vision. This is the legend, is that when the Bach died, they cooled off Gehenim for 40 days for everyone. Gehenim was on vacation in honor of the Bach. The Bach, he came to the Olam HaEmes, in his honor, everyone got to stay. 40 days. When the Baal Shem Tov learned about the greatness of the Bach, so he said, it's kedai to be samech on the Bach and be mate chadash. Since all the grain that they used in Poland was all grain that was owned by non-Jews, so the Bach says it's mutter. Okay, everyone is very into the Bach. Everyone is very excited about the Bach. The Mishnah Berurah, he goes through all of these opinions and he says, everyone is samech on the Bach, and he quotes the Mishnah Berurah, and he says, what's going to happen to Olam HaEmes when they ask the person, not going to be on Yashan? They'll say, I'm Samech on the Bach. So the Chavetz Chaim says, the Bach, if you semech on the Bach holds that you're not allowed to talk Lashon Hara. He may be a Das Yochid in this matter, but... So what happened to that halacha? The Mishnah Berurah is very, he seems to say that it's a very, very weak heter. But don't make a macha. Anyone that it became a minu kadmon to be soimech on the Bach, and to be soimech on all of these other opinions, even though the evidence of the vast majority of the Rishonim is not like the Bach, and not to distinguish between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Li'aretz, and it's a suffix de Araisa, and especially today in the modern world where it's very easy to know, to determine what the situation is. So it's a very big mystery as to why we continue to be extremely lenient. A lot of the leniencies that apply to Russia and apply to Poland and Europe do not apply to America. They have absolutely no application to America. Now, another very interesting heter, another interesting idea is that someone has said the only time Chazal asserted midrabanan chodosh and chutz li'aretz. Let's we go with the Rishon that said chodosh indeed is asser in chodosh is indeed asser in chutz li'aretz only midrabanan. Let's follow the sheet of the Or Zeru and the Trumas Hadesha that it's only asser midrabanan and it's not asser midaraisa. The Rabban, according to some Rishonim, they only asserted midrabanan on the lands that are near Eretz Yisrael, like Bavel, and like, I don't know, maybe you want to say Poland is near Eretz Yisrael, not really, I don't know what that means, only lands that are near Eretz Yisrael. Why? Now, what's the lamdis? Because let's say in Eretz Yisrael, when it comes the second day of Pesach, there's no grain. They don't have any barley to use for the carbon oimer. Where are they going to bring the chodosh, the new grain from? So they're going to go to the closest place they can find. So they're going to go to Bavel. Will they go to America to go bring grain, to bring grain in order to bring the mincha chadosh ala Hashem b'shavu? That's a shuas. They're going to bring the omer from grain that grew in America, that grew in Poland, that grew in Europe? No way. They're only going to go to the closest place. They'll go to Egypt, they'll go to Syria, they'll go to Syria, they'll go to Egypt, they're going to go to even to Bavel, so they'll go to Iraq. Iraq is also a mahalach to get to Iraq. It's also a mahalach, but it's not so far compared to going west, to going to England, to go to to Poland. What? So you want to say that today, you can go by plane, today you have new technology. We don't have to be machmir on that. We only have to, that takana that was made in the time of Chazal was to prohibit chadosh and chutz li'aretz. But what's the lumdis of the prohibition? Because the chadosh and chutz li'aretz potentially can be used to bring the carbon oimer, the minchas oimer. But that can only be used only within the lands that are semuchos to the aretz. Not to places like Poland and Europe, and certainly not America. So therefore, there was never even a prohibition midrabanan to prohibit chadash in chutz li'aretz. So this pretty much is, this pretty much is what we rely upon in America, a combination of all of these factors. Again, well, number one, it's a seker. Who says you mechuyif to go look at the serial number? You mechuyif look at the serial number? Every manufacturer, every company, they have their own minhagim, their own customs. They do their own things. They have surplus. They have this, they have that. So when you go buy a product, you don't know. Maybe the product is chadash, maybe it's yashin, whether it's the winter crop, the summer crop. Even the summer crop can sometimes be good depending on when Pesach falls out. It's a sveik sveika. You can be saimich. Number two, and also we're assuming it's the rabbanon. We have the Bach. Most of the products today, almost all the grain today that comes from Chutz Li'aretz is owned by non-Jews. So that's the sheet of the Bach. And whoever says the prohibition to begin with in Chutz Li'aretz, maybe it's only in the Arotos that are smuchos. And even if you want to say that there are real grounds to be machmir, there's also a principle in halacha that if the minug is to be makel, you can't change the minug. If this is a minug kadmon, this goes back 1,000 years to be makel. For whatever reason, it's true. The vast majority, 95% of the Paiskim, it comes out of Machmir. It should be Osir, clearly Osir. But if this is the custom for Kadmonius, that's how it's always been done, it's not the Jewish way to take upon yourself new chumras.
What about the Kelim?
Some people hold that those that are makbid on Yashan, until Pesach, if you have a dish, you have to kash the kelim. It's a chumrah.
You can't eat in somebody's house.
Or... That's right. You can't eat because their kelim are tray for you. It's a very big chumrah. There are opinions, some hold, they don't go so far. You don't go that far. But once Pesach passes, it's mutter, 100%. You don't have to kash the kelim once Pesach is over, because then the b'liyos also becomes mutter. He brings that down, but you never see that. That's an extreme chumrah. Now, by the way, of Aaron Soloveitchik, these are the general approaches why the minig in America is to be so lenient, even though the reasons really don't apply. Again, who says you're mechuyev to go look at a serial number? You're not mechuyev to be making yourself meshuga. You can rely on the sveika. And the Bach, a guy, it's a midrabanan, who says it applies in America, it only applies in the lands that are close to Eretz Yisrael, and the minig is to be mekel, so a mekel ad hayom hazeh. This appears to be the main opinion, that's what everyone seems to follow. And you know, however,
Did we say that the Rabbanan Soloveitchik's matzahs was...
So matzahs, even Rav Kook, he brings down Rav Kook, he gave a hechsher, the matzahs for some reason they were more machmir on. Because matz, it's easy to be machmer on, because anyway, they require shmira mishas kitzira. Anyway, the flour has to be, a flour, l'chatchila, a shmira matzah, has to be guarded from the time when you harvest the grain. So you're dealing with the grain from the moment it's cut off the ground. When you buy a shmira matzah, you don't just go into a ShopRite and buy flour. The flour you buy in ShopRite is chametz, because it's been processed and washed. It's very likely that it's mamish chametz d'oraisa. When you're dealing with shmura matzah, you're paying $30 a pound, right? You're dealing with people who went out into the fields to cut the matzah. Once you're in control of cutting the grain, you're in control. You're in control. You know exactly when the grain was grown, so then there's no playing games. You're not going to be some holy satirim. And that's why matzah generally, at least shmura matzah, I don't want matzah, shmura matzah, is almost 100% always going to be Yashan. Kemach Yashan is not going to be initially stored from the previous year. Now, in America, it's interesting what different Gedolei Yisrael did. Aaron Soloveitchik was always Machmir. All of the Soloveitchiks, I have cousins of Soloveitchiks, the Machmir, they don't touch. Every time they used to come to us to eat, always a problem. Have to buy special Yashan Chalas, special Yashan products, because the Soloveitchik family, their tradition is to be Makbir, to be Machmir on Yashan. Rav Moshe Feinstein, he writes he was not Makbir, was only makbid on barley and oats. Because barley and oats in his day was very easy to be makbid on. It was very easy to determine. Rabbi Moshe lived in different times, going back over here many, many years ago. So barley and oats was very easy to determine if it's Yashan Chodesh. I don't know the details why that's so. And when it comes to wheat, it doesn't seem to say that Rabbi Moshe was machmir in America, or himself was machmir. Okay, there were many other gedolim that were machmir. He has a whole long list. I don't remember all the names. That indeed were machmer. Now he says what he says that is very, very fascinating. Fascinating, and he really says quite a bit about what happened in America. Someone here mentioned that you never heard of Chodesh until 1980. So he quotes here the person who wrote this article. This is an amazing thing. This is like a golden nugget in this article. Rabbi Yehuda Spitz. Rabbi Yehuda Spitz, he is a Shoyle Meshev in Ar Sameach in Yerushalayim. His father was a very big mumcha in Kashrus. His father, he writes about his father. And by the way, Rishol Salanter, the Rogachava. Okay, the Rogachava going. Okay, he lived in Dvinsk. Where's Dvinsk?
Dvinsk is in Latvia.
And where is that?
That's one of the Baltic states.
So he was makbid. He did not eat. Rabbi Eliezer Silver. Okay, the chief rabbi. Everyone knows Rabbi Eliezer Silver. Cincinnati. He was makbid. He was very makbid. He did not touch bread that was not Yashan. Okay, that was in his day, very difficult. To be makbid, he was very makbid. He always brought with him food. He traveled the world to raise money.
Didn't trust anybody.
His own food.
But even his own food, he only was very makbid on Yashan. Okay, so the Gedolei Yisrael, in the difficult times, are very, very makbid.
So a company like Kellogg's, they keep track of exactly...
Yes, everything today is kept track of. You go look
at... They know when it's grown?
Yeah, they know when it's grown.
Because they know when it's...
Well, Kellogg's is not grain. They don't have wheat.
Most of the stuff you buy is 2 years, 3 years old.
Not necessarily. No, that's not true. It's not true anymore. It's not true.
Now they say it used to be until about 1980.
Oh, right. So here he quotes his father. Okay, this is before my time. He quotes over here.
No, everything has to be right before it becomes kosher.
Okay. He quotes his father. Let me quote. Let me just tell you his name. 1 second. My father, renowned kashrut expert, Rabbi Manish Spitz. How do you pronounce his name? Manish? Manish? Manish?
Manish.
Manish Spitz. A Talmud of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. He was a Baki when he says that what happened in America is as follows. It's a great tragedy what happened in America, that there was what's called the Russian wheat deal of 1972. You remember this? Before my time. Okay, the Russian wheat deal. Until 1972, Yashan in America was not an issue. Everything was Yashan. Because there are two crops, there is the wheat, there is the winter crop and the summer crop, and almost 99.9% of all grain, all products in America was always from the winter crop. Because there was a surplus, there was an enormous surplus of grain grown in America. It wasn't an issue. Even though all of the reasons that apply to Russia, the ground is frozen, and applies to Europe, starvation, all of the reasons, all of the heterin that applied, that were used throughout in the Alta Haim, in Europe, in Poland, in Russia, do not apply to America. And Chayyim come to America, we should start fresh, Mimakbid on Yashan, don't apply to America. It wasn't an issue. Because in America, there was an enormous surplus of grain until 1972, and the way it was that basically everything was so slow. All products until 1972 were always from the winter crop. In 1972, the United States decided we have so much grain, and there are people in Russia, our enemies in the Cold War, who are starving to death. If they're going to starve to death, then there's no one to have war with. So we might as well feed them. We might as well send our enemies in Russia food. They shouldn't starve to death. So they decided to give away all the surplus. So they said, we're giving away the surplus, we're going to give them the old stuff. Why should we give the Russians the good stuff, the fresh? Until we had everything.
That way we would have been marshaled them with chagos.
Until
we would have killed them all that way.
The mentality was, when you have everything, it's amazing in the insight into human psychology. When you have everything, I'll have shmatis. I don't care. I'll take for myself the garbage. We have everything. So I have to have the new, the fresh. The old is also good. What's not fresh is good. But once we're giving away all of the extra, also give them the old, and we will improve the technology where we can bring to market the new. So there was a major shift that happened very quickly in a very, very short period of time when they passed this law, or this act of chesed. It's a very great act of chesed, the wheat deal, the Russian wheat deal of 1972.
Jackson Vinnick.
Okay, even if it's for money, it's still a chesed to give someone what
it
to eat.
It helped us get the Russian Jews out of Russia too.
Yeah. So whatever it was, so this was a very rapid, sudden change that happened behind everyone's back, is that the entire industry shipped out the old, and we kept for ourselves in America the new. And this then became the new standard. This became now the new standard, especially when it came to baking breads. And obviously there's a difference in the quality and what's better for bread, not bread. And this is what happened. Problem is the Frum community, which was a very small community then, you know, just struggling to survive, to pay tuition, didn't really pay attention to this sudden change.
They didn't notice the change.
Didn't pick up on it.
It took 8 years.
What?
From 72 to 80.
Even more, even until today. And once, what, you know, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Once people came to America in mass in the early 1900s, and then after the war, 1945, and people started settling, very Orthodox Jews started beginning to thrive in America, and it was never an issue until 1972, and then until people began to realize, you know, it might be a problem. Listen, if this is what we were doing last year, it's good enough. It's hard to go and change the system. So that's why Ad Hayom Hazeh, It's a losing battle. No one's willing to quickly change their whole.
We're not selling it to Russia anymore.
It doesn't matter, but the whole industry changed. You're right. Even though it's true that the wheat deal is not nogi anymore, it's not the same. But since the industry at that point in time, they had to give away all the extra, and just keep for us what we need. So they gave away all the old, they kept the new. It became a new standard in America to only bring to market what's fresh, what's new. And that created a very big problem for us when it comes to the laws of Chadash and Yashan.
We do still export wheat.
We do export, but still, the standard of what we're eating is different. So this is where it stands. Then now, there's another issue he points out over here. Another reason he points out over here. From a certain esteemed rabbinic personality, he requests not to be named. That's very dangerous. Whenever you want to be named, it's very dangerous. And he said the reason why in the kashrus industry they're very happy to rely upon the heterium and continue to not pay attention to this issue and to be samech on all of the leniencies is because there's a very great danger today in eating yashan. Because it's a fact, the yashan is infested with bugs. The industry standard for grain of storage is not up to par. Mm-hmm. And it's a fact that if you'll put under a taste central laboratory the new versus the old, there is a very high ratio of proportion of toilahim bugs in the old. Yeah. What?
Did you have molds in one of the bakeries in the square?
Yeah.
And you square is not makbid on your side.
Yeah. Chassidim are not makbid, right? Yeah. This chassidim are not makbid. Baal Shem Tov. He set into motion.
The guy told me, I wanted to do some of the Litvakas a favor, and I wanted to bring Yoshan.
Yeah.
But it was full of bugs.
Oh, see? Exactly. It was full of bugs. And the issue of eating a bug is much, much more chomor than eating Yoshan, eating Chadash.
Why does bakery sift the flour? Why is the bakery sift the flour?
They all.
Okay, so this obviously eating a bug, there are five lavin. There are five lavin without question. You eat a bug, even a bug that's been chopped up into teeny little pieces. You can't see this. Don't have to see a bug. The bug has been pulverized, but the bug is there. The bug, even if it's been broken apart, it's still shiloh. Eating a bug is even five lavin. If you eat chadash, there are many poiskim that you're not doing anything wrong. There are many reasons. It's a guy and all these heterim that you're not even doing it ever altogether. So if you're going to be so quick to be machmir in America to force everyone to eat yashan, you better first make sure that your new chumrah is not really a kula. You're having people eating toilahim, eating bugs. So this person, this the last thing he writes over here in this article over here is the reason why he feels that in America, the kashrus, the ones who really have a lot of power in America, the kashrus agencies, if they really stand up, they really make an issue. So the kash agencies are not very, quick. They don't want people to adopt the chumras of Yashan so quickly because of this very significant problem. Maybe today the standards are getting better when it comes to bugs. I don't know how all these things work. And obviously everything is extremely complex. But these are some of the major issues that we do. Like I told you, most of us are not makbid on this, but there is a trend. It's like water. It's like the bugs in the water. I'm assuming 90% of the people living in Brooklyn do not filter the water in their house.
No.
I don't think so. I think 90% do not filter the water in their house. Yeah.
Within the OU, there was a
machlekes. Rabbi Herschel Shachter, Rabbi Belsky. And Rabbi Herschel Shachter. Rabbi Belsky holds that you should not filter your water. I heard him say it's even better not to. You're making a lot. He says the filters are not so good, they end up in your stomach. The filters are sort of the bugs in your stomach, the metal nets, they put that at the end of your like a hole in your stomach. He holds this whole thing is a total halacha. For halacha, he holds it's not correct. Rav Herschel Shachter, he changed his mind a few times. That's what I've heard. He went back and forth a few times. I think the bottom line he holds, you should be machmir. Rav David Feinstein is famous for being machmir. He's very machmir. He holds you should filter all the water. Rav David Feinstein, he holds, he's from that. Other poskim are divided. from my estimation, I don't see people running out in their private homes to filter their water. I just don't see. There are people, there are B'nai Torah that do it, they go do it. But what about in a shul, in a restaurant? Torah Vadas. Torah Vadas was the Rosh. Who's the Rosh Yeshiva Torah Vadas the last couple of years? Rybelski. Do they have filters on the water fountains and on and the sinks in the kitchen? You bet they do. Every water fountain and every the kitchen is fully filtered. But Rybelski holds you're not mechuyev to, and in fact he holds better not to. Listen, for business, the OU will not give a hechsher on a restaurant, a pizza shop, or anything, or any type of. There's not a filter. Why? Because do they hold you need a filter? No, they don't. I know that as a fact. I spoke to people today, they don't. It's just a matter that when it comes to the tzibur, there's a higher standard. There's a higher standard. People in their homes, the average person, I don't think they have. So it's the same thing now. That's what's become with the Yashan. The average person doesn't blink. The Yashan, now Yashan. But you go to the bakery, you're in the business. You're in business. It's good for business to have on the sign of the business of the bakery, we only use Kemach Yashan. But are people privately really makbid? I don't think so. So that's where we spent years ago. You go to a bakery and you ask them behind the counter, is it Yashan? They'll look at you like, what are you Yashan? Is it stale? We only sell Chadash. We only sell fresh.
Yeah. Middleman,
you told me that, yeah.
Opened up his store. It was right around 1980. And someone came in, he was selling some cake. Someone asked him, is it Yashan? And he said, what? And he says, Yashan. They told him, he said, I was born in Meir Shearim, I grew up in Williamsburg, I had to come to Flatbush to learn about Yashan.
Mm-hmm. Well, Eretz Yisrael is a deraisa, it's not a joke. There, I don't know how this is, but there it's a given. Okay, on that, with that joke, let me just give you another joke, we'll end with this joke. This is a joke you're going to like.
It's a
joke, it's something similar. I thought you could tell me something else. I thought you'd tell me something else. You remind me of a joke, I'll leave you with a joke. There was a fellow, was nothing to do with anything, just not a joke. A fellow who was a guy, non-Jew, and he wanted to make some money. So he saw this Jew. He goes around collecting, and people give him money. Wow, what a parnasa! You go around panhandler, you can make a living. So he tried it. He goes into shul, gets dressed up like a Jew, and he goes around with his hand, and people put some quarters in his hand. Okay, so then he sees another guy in shul who's doing much better than him. He's doing very good. So what's your secret? So he says, I tell them that I'm a Ger Tzedek. I used to be in the, I'm a Ger Tzedek. I say, I'm a Ger Tzedek. So they have more, they have to mess a Ger. Wow, if you say those magic words, they give you more money. So he goes around, Tzedakah for a Ger Tzedek. They talk, they give him more money. So then he sees another fellow, they give him even more money. So he says, what's your secret? He says, I'm an Enikul of the Baal Shem Tov. So when I go around, I say, I'm an Enikul of the Baal Shem Tov, tzedakah, tzedakah. They give me even more money. Gevaldik. Let me do that also. He goes around the shul. I'm a Ger Tzedek, an Enikul of the Baal Shem Tov. And he gets nothing. Okay, stop here.